Who can say where the killer roams? When the blood flows, it's slaying time. Slay away. Slay away. Slay away.
Behind your favorite horror films, lore, gore, and every kill in between. I'm your host, E.L. King, and on this very special episode of Slay Away, we're chatting with writer and director Richard Waters for an exclusive interview about his award-winning Irish folk horror film, Bring Out the Fear. The Dublin-born filmmaker made his directorial debut in 2013, which was followed by the short film Video Nasty and his second feature in A Stranger's House in 2018. Bring Out the Fear follows Rosie and Dan, a couple in a doomed relationship. The couple's dissolving relationship created a tightness in my chest. The tense atmosphere Waters sets up at the film's onset rests uncomfortably between them. The cracks are easy to spot well before Rosie and Dan head into the woods together one last time. The disillusion of their romance is inevitable, with each of them intent on moving the relationship in different directions. Deciding to end things in the least offensive way possible, they decide to take one last walk through the local forest, but suddenly, the endlessly winding paths lead nowhere, the trees never seem to end, the sun never sets, and a sinister presence stalks and torments them. There is no escape, but from what exactly are they hiding?
Here somewhere, there's no way we're this lost.
No!
No!
Our forests are not that big. We could have walked like coast to coast by now.
Richard, thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited to chat with you. Bring Out the Fear was definitely one of my favorite features that I screened during Grimfest last year. And I'm so glad I got the opportunity to write about it because it definitely struck a really personal chord with me. So I like to kick things off and ask folks how they discovered their love of horror, because I know that this is not your first horror feature film. You've done some others in the past, including a found footage film.
Yeah, no, I've kind of always been into it. You know, I always think it's hard to pinpoint when I actually really got into it. But, you know, I think back to when I was a kid and being into things like Ghostbusters or Gremlins and things like that. I was mad obsessed with those. But I even remember, you know, watching shows like my brother was big into The X-Files. So I'd see a lot of that when I was young. And, you know, that obviously that's very horror-tilted in a lot of ways. And what was the Sam Raimi show as well? American Gothic. I always remember, like, that was the big one. I was trying to stay up past my bedtime to try and sneak glances at that film or at that TV show. And that was always just, you know, these kind of otherworldly stories always kind of blew my mind. And just, you know, it always kind of, because of I grew up kind of away from all my friends kind of lived far enough away that I wouldn't be able to sort of hang out with them in the evenings, or, you know, we weren't all on the teams together or anything like that. So, you know, I'd spent a lot of my childhood kind of having to make up my own scenarios or my own story, my own fun. And I guess things like horror and sci-fi and all that would really kind of push your brain to the limits and kind of, you know, you put yourself in these worlds. And obviously a lot of horror as well has a lot of more outsider characters in the center of it all. So that's very easy to put yourself into. So I guess an awful lot of people, that would be the real appeal for a lot of horror, is that it is, you know, I guess it's an outsider kind of thing in a way, even though it's for the masses.
It's very comforting to this societal thought or expectation around the other. So when you feel like you're on the outside all the time, enjoying a horror film where there's characters who help represent that and how you're feeling is typically pretty cathartic.
God, yeah. I mean, like, even to this point in time, like, I feel like I have to watch horror to just kind of be able to unwind and relax.
I
feel like if I don't, I have to watch horror. If I don't watch horror films, I start to have nightmares, you know? I have to watch the horror. I have to deal with it in my waking world so it doesn't go into my sleep world.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you, what is the most recent horror film that really struck a chord with you?
Oh, my God. I'm trying to think. I must have been watching something on Shudder. I saw You're Not My Mother, the Kate Dolan film. I got to see that on the big screen recently, which is great because, you know, it's an Irish film and it's kind of folk horror territory. But it's great because it's set in an Irish housing estate. So it's an urban area. It's kind of a side of Ireland that a lot of times in films isn't really explored kind of for bigger films. And I mean, it's still quite a small film. It was an independent film, but it did a great job of kind of putting it in a world that I know. You know, I mean, I grew up kind of in the countryside a bit, but I still spent plenty of time with family or friends in housing estates. And it does this great thing where it's a changing story where, you know, someone thinks that their mother has been switched out with a changeling, and the kind of pond where it happens is just, it's a pond there at the side of the housing estate. You know, it's right there. People walk by it every day. There's nothing madly nefarious about it, but it's just right there. And that's something that's always kind of grabbed me, is I'm obsessed with the idea of, you know, something in everyday life that shouldn't, you know, that can cause something, some huge upset or kind of completely upend your life, is just like one wrong step away. I mean, even with Ring Out the Fear, the idea of, like, you know, this couple that just are in this forest and he throws a ring away and it kind of brings them into this horrible world. But even other films where, you know, people find something that they, you know, say the ring, where they find a tape that's cursed or whatever, and it puts them into this horrible world. A lot of kind of real, you know, nothing that's too nefarious, but then suddenly it's like, you know, your curiosity might, you know, doom you.
Well, I know I'm really getting very deep into folk horror lately, and I would say, even though Bring Out the Fear definitely struck a psychological thriller type chord with me, there are folk horror elements in the film.
Definitely, yeah.
And I really liked that about it. So can you tell everyone just a little bit more about your film Bring Out the Fear?
So Bring Out the Fear, it's about a couple, Rosie and Dan, who are in a doomed relationship, who go for one last walk, really, in their favorite forest. And, you know, he tries to propose to her. He wants to get married to try and solve their problems. She doesn't want to do that, but also can't bring herself to break up with him. So when they try to leave the spot, they try to go back to the car. They find that the path they took doesn't seem to lead them back to where they should be. No way they go seems to lead them right way. And suddenly they realize the sun doesn't seem to be setting. The distance, they should be by the coastline. The coast has disappeared. Everything is just wrong. So you're putting these two people who are suddenly at odds with each other because one of them wants to break up, one of them wants to get married. And they're putting this life or death situation or a stressful situation. And on top of that, something seems like it's chasing them or following them or, you know, psychologically poking at them. And that's basically that's the film in a nutshell. God, you think after all this time of trying to describe what the film is, I'd be much better at it, but I absolutely hate describing. Because, I mean, the real basics of it, it's like, you know, two people lost in a forest, but that's just so boring.
Well, it's interesting because there's this just fantastic opening scene. And I know in my review, which I was very flattered that you enjoyed, so thank you.
No, but listen, I mean, thank you very much. I mean, I'm going to have to, like, print it out and frame it and all now. It's so lovely.
Oh, my gosh. Well, if you do, be sure to send me a photo.
Oh, my God. Do a signed copy.
Well, I know. So Rowan Moore, I think, had done some of that jarring cinematography that I experienced. And there's just this amazing, like, very disturbing opening score by Steve Nolan. And it really just brought you in to having this immediate sense of unease. And I thought the aerial shots were really interesting too, because it sets you up to see where is this space that everything is going to take place and really the vastness of it.
Yeah.
Yet Rosie says our forests are small. I thought that was sort of a funny callback. So I was like, well, it didn't look that tiny, but there's this opening with this man at the beginning that just sets you up to immediately think that there's this horrible thing that they're going to encounter, just knowing from the synopsis that they're going to take a walk in these woods. And I thought that was interesting, and just thinking about the forest as its own entity and the sound design and things that were going on. And I really felt that sound of like something hungering for to just kind of, and feeding off of that desperation and fear.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a huge part of it is, you know, not seeing the monster kind of thing. You know, it's all about the anticipation of what is it that's going to be there. You know, again, like you say, from the very get-go, you know that there's going to be something from the opening scene. You know, again, you don't quite know what it is. And, you know, I think, you know, when we start to sort of show anything in it, it's not maybe not quite what you expect, I hope, which is, you know.
Actually, it was very disturbing once you start to see some things, and And you can see Rosie just getting more and more terrified towards the end of the film, and these things that happen to start popping up that you do see.
Yeah.
It's actually really terrifying. And I know some people have compared it to the Blair Witch Project, which I thought was interesting. I sort of like, maybe it's the Lost in the Woods aspect,
yeah.
But there are those little things like with the rock circles in the Blair Witch Project that I could kind of see.
Yeah, definitely a little bit of that DNA in there. I mean, I've always, I do love the Blair Witch, and I mean, I think there's equal parts of that as there is Silent Hill as well. But as well, something like Kill List by Ben Wheatley was a huge influence as well in a lot of ways. But then just the general, I think Irish people in general are maybe into their folk horror just because it's a huge part of our culture. You know, I mean, obviously things like, you know, the Banshee travels the world, but if you look at the amount of things in Irish culture where a lot of our stories just tend to be about, you know, again, that idea of you can just be living your everyday life and it's a case of don't go over to that mound in that field because that's where the fairies live, and if you go near them, they're going to kill you, or they're going to steal you and take you away into their underground caverns or whatever. And you know, I think there's just a huge amount of that kind of like, it's just embedded in the Irish culture, and we're a country that's quite new. You know, it was up until about 100 years ago, really, it was still part of Britain. And, you know, it has its own identity that people still strongly associate to keep a strong feel of, even if they don't, you know, it's not something we go around every day. You know, I mean, Irish people, it's not like we're walking around kind of like Wicker Man style villagers or anything like that, you know? I mean, it's a modern country and all, but I mean, people, there's still that strong folklore that runs through everything. And, you know, I think for me, I always think with some of the biggest horror, the best kind of horror is horror that you can't control. And I mean, I go back and say about something that, you know, again, you're just living your everyday life and something horrible happens to upset it. And you even see things in J-horror has an awful lot of that as well, where it's, you know, you can be a good person, but you can't get away from these things. And I mean, maybe it's breaking away from that Christian ideal of if you, even if you get in a bad situation, if you, you know, repent, you know, you're going to get away from these things. Whereas, you know, a lot of these kind of ideas of horror, it doesn't matter how good you are. You know, you're screwed.
There's a lot of films where the ending doesn't wrap it up in a nice bow after all the terrible things have happened. And I absolutely love those films. and ones that leave you questioning, like Bring Out the Fear leaves you continuously questioning your reality even after the credits start to roll, and Rosie's reality. And it's super interesting, and it just makes you think.
Yeah, definitely. Like, and I mean, I guess if people haven't seen the film, if they skip ahead a tiny bit here, but like the idea that, you know, she is kind of stuck in this kind of perpetual loop almost. You know, I mean, the film has an awful lot to say about, you know, toxic relationships. And, you know, it was written in a Me Too kind of era of things, you know, where I was having to, as a person, have a lot of thoughts about my own actions or my own kind of place in the world as, you know, a cis white male. And what does my action or inaction do to these things? And, you know, kind of, you know, thinking about what it does to other people. And, you know, the reality is that a lot of women are in these horrible situations where, you know, maybe they don't have a chance to, you know, they're stuck in cycles no matter what they do. If they do everything that's right, if they do everything that's good, they still get kind of screwed over by it. Like in the film, you know, Rosie, she kind of, it seems like she has a bit of respite when she puts on the wedding ring, you know. So it's, that's the woman who's getting away from things by, you know, accepting the man's proposal and becoming, you know, the man's bride. And then the second she takes it off, everything goes wrong again. And even though she thinks she's overcome it and she's done everything right, she's gone on her hero's journey, she ends up back in the exact same spot where actually, no, things aren't okay. Things are still bad. And I mean, maybe it's a little bit nihilistic of me, but that's, you know, I think my own kind of thoughts was that, you know, I mean, that's the sad reality, I think, for a lot of people in the world, is that that's the kind of situation that people are stuck in. And maybe it's a little bit heavy, but I mean, you know, I mean, it's not a light film. So I thought maybe that was kind of a, the approach I thought that was kind of appropriate for the ending of it.
Well, I think in a way it almost speaks about the pattern in toxic relationships and that loop when abuse and things happen as well. Like you want to escape or get away, but you're stuck in that perpetual loop and it's terrifying and you don't want to do anything to upset the other person, but you need to get away to survive. So I felt like there was some commentary on that, even though that wasn't the exact relationship dynamics for Rosie and Dan.
There absolutely is, because I mean, I think some people, when they think they hear a toxic relationship, they do think just, they kind of think a physically abusive one and leave it at that. But I mean, a lot of times, an awful lot of these relationships can be so, it's about the emotional abuse, really. And I mean, you look at Dan in the film, and I mean, he's quite emotionally manipulative. And you know, in certain areas, you see he knows he's doing it. In other areas, he's just too ignorant to realize he's doing it. And I mean, that's another thing as well. I mean, when I talk about having to really sort of look in on myself and all, I kind of look back to the way I was when I was younger. And like I think about, you know, some interactions I had with people where, you know, say I expected that, you know, when is it my turn? You know, that kind of it's a very, very pig-headed kind of version of reality where you expect that I'm a good person. When is my chance to be with this person? Or why don't I have the girl on my arm or some of that? You know, putting your own thoughts and ideals on things, you know, kind of maybe taking too much from the Hollywood movies about, you know, if you do this or that, or if you act this or that way, if you make these big gestures or if you make these big brash moments
that you deserve.
Yeah, exactly.
That girl or that thing. Yeah.
And it's, I do think like, you know, I mean, as a teenager, when some of these things were happening, and I remember, like, you know, I was set straight pretty quick with things, and like, I learned a lot from that. But just, I kind of thought of, a lot of people aren't really taught that. I'd hope maybe now we're in an age where young men are kind of taught these things a lot earlier, a lot more, like, you know, maybe respect or thinking about, you know, people as people more than anything else. But there's definitely people out there who don't, you know. I mean, I see people, I know people who act in this kind of a bit of an abusive way towards others. You know, they try to get their end out of the relationship. They don't sort of see it as a partnership. They see it as what they want. And if they're not getting what they want, then they're totally entitled to be horrendous people about it.
Well, I wanted to know, is there anything else that the forest represents throughout the film? I know that they're isolated and it's claustrophobic and they can't escape, but because there is this supernatural element to things, I just was curious if there was anything else that the forest was representing or the entity within the forest.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's like loads of levels to all that kind of stuff in a way where, you know, on the surface level where you look at the kind of supernatural movie, you know, we were talking about, again, kind of folklore area where, you know, they're basically in the monster's lair, in the beast, the belly of the beast. But then obviously you go deeper in, you're talking about the psychological side, you know. I mean, the sunshine, it's never nighttime there, it's always sunshine, which, you know, you think about it, like, you know, everything seems like it's well and good because it's in the sunshine, but even in the sunshine, horrible things can happen. Even though things might look bright and rosy, still there's horrible things that are going on. And, you know, they're in this forest and, you know, it just keeps getting, it gets darker and darker in the forest while never the daytime stays there. It's just like that world is kind of entrenching them and pulling them in. But yeah, certainly the idea of, you know, being stuck in that loop, being stuck in a, you know, never ending, it's just one long never ending day, you know, when really they should have severed ties. You know, it's, you know, about two characters who, you know, make bad decisions in a lot of ways on both ends, really. And one of them, I think, very clearly worse than the other. But definitely that, you know, I think as well, you look at it, Dan in the film, he kind of checks out or kind of freaks out a lot more in the situation than Rosie does. You know, again, a little bit more like the impetulant child. He hasn't quite grown as much as she has. You know, and he's in this forest and, you know, he's kind of, instead of working hard to try and get out of it, he kind of takes a back seat to it and he lets it absorb him pretty much. And I mean, sort of without going too deep into it, you know, kind of what happens with him and all that in the film. Whereas Rosie, she's kind of constantly trying to push against it, trying to get out. And that's why I talk about, you know, characters who you know, people who do everything right, who work hard, who put in the effort, and, you know, it still doesn't really pay off. I don't know if that really answers too much about The Forest and all that, but...
Well, it's interesting because it's like, well, think about that idyllic setting that just becomes a nightmare. So that definitely comes across in the film. There's a lot of hints and things that I noted just in the opening scenes between Rosie and Dan in the car and him going to the shop and then him running into Eric. It's very telling about all of those characters and the things that are kind of bubbling under the surface as well. So there's the interaction between the two of them where, you know, Rosie mentions, like, you're not going to get booze or you're not going to drink. And that sent a signal up for me. And then her calling a friend on the phone, telling them where the boxes were, and Dan coming out and seeing her on the phone, and immediately just like, you could see the rage all over Tad's face. And it was really well portrayed. And then, of course, he goes into a tirade.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a little bit of that thing of, like, just think of the way he interacts, you know, when he's with a guy character where he's kind of establishing his, you know, his territory, for lack of a better word, versus when he's with her. You know, I mean, he gets argumentative and all that, but in pretty much every argument they have, Rosie gets the better, and she basically talks him down. Like, most of the time, the only time he kind of gets his way with the, like, with the argument is more like, you know, I guess there's nothing else we can do, as opposed to, you know, he doesn't really become an aggressor against her in a lot of these arguments until obviously later on in the film. But because his way, you know, again, when he's dealing with a guy, you know, it's that kind of alpha male acting, whereas with a woman, he's kind of it's more about the emotional manipulation. It's a lot more, you know, I guess, you know, he as a person is kind of worried about losing this woman that he thinks he is owed, that is his woman. And again, like, you know, obviously there's a lot to be said for, you know, people just avoiding making the bad decision or making the hard decisions, making the right choices in life.
That definitely came across. And I know I had talked about in my review, like, this romance that's just dissolving, and the two of them are in completely different directions and where they want this relationship to go.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Dan is, yeah, the idea of trying to solve problems by locking yourself into a contract is not a very good idea. That's just my two cents.
No, well, listen, I mean, I've seen people who do things like that, you know, maybe not in quite.
Yeah, it's a reality. It's 100% a reality. And so for me, that actually happened to me. It mirrored my exact situation. And I was like, man, I've been through that, where I've been on the other end, in terms of, like, Rosie cheated in this case, my partner did. And then my partner proposed to me later and I said yes, but within a year I broke it off. So, or got away, if you will, escaped the situation. So I just thought it was interesting because I could relate so closely to Rosie's character in a lot of ways, and these emotions that she's going through, and that the actor, and I'm going to pronounce her name wrong. Is it Ciara?
Kira.
Kira. Okay. Kira is conveying. And it's the same types of feelings you have in those relationships, not just the fear of the situation. So the contempt and the irritability and the fear and the exhaustion and the rage, and that all happens when you're trapped in a relationship that you can't get out of, or that you're, I don't want to say too timid, because I think that Rosie is a strong character, but you're unable to assert yourself because you don't want to hurt somebody else's feelings.
Well, that's it. Yeah. There's always, like, sometimes there's a guilt there, and whether or not that's a deserved guilt, if it's guilt that someone, the other partner, might be putting onto you as a way to keep you kind of, like, locked into a relationship, you know, the guilt is your, like, the bound that's keeping you in.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of, I think, genuine fear to be found in the film. And I liked it a lot. So what I want to ask you is, what's happening next with you in Pretty Weird Pictures?
Yeah, so it's Weird Pretty Pictures, which, by the way, if there's...
Oh, sorry, Weird Pretty Pictures. Did they say it backwards? Well, Weird Pretty Pictures.
Sorry, you got it in the review right now. The big thing is, my big lesson for anyone out there who's coming up with a company name, make sure it's not one that people can easily get wrong, because I think most people get the name the wrong way around. We thought we were being so clever. But yeah, no, we've... So this is our fourth feature, or well, I guess third feature film. Because we did a rom-com, but that wasn't as weird Pretty Pictures. But I'm a horror lover, like, to the core. So my next hope is, there is something kind of quietly and discreetly coming up, kind of in the interim at the moment, but then Bring It to Fear, I would expect, will be should be readily available by the end of the year for people, hopefully. And which is great, because I'm just excited to be able to share that with people, because it came from a very kind of humble background and all. I don't exaggerate when I say that they're short films with catering budgets that dwarf the budget of this film. But then beyond that, you know, we have a few bigger films. Well, I mean, I say bigger for us, but and again, the real world terms, quite small, coming up on the horizon that should be happening at the back half of this year. I'm happy to be kind of bringing out the fear to people, sharing it around, because, you know, you make a film like this, you know, we put all of our heart and soul into it. We put a lot of time and effort and all, and you just kind of hope that it's going to be good enough to resonate with people. But the main thing was, when I wrote it and we made it, I made it with the intention that it didn't really matter if it was going to, you know, go out there, if it was going to find distribution, or if it was going to get out there to any proper big releases. For me, it was more about, you know, I'm an artist. I have to be making things. I feel wrong if I'm not trying to make something. And, you know, this was a film that, you know, I decided we had a very small crew, and all the people we worked with for the majority were people we'd worked with before. That we knew were people we liked, that we got on well with, that had the right talents, that we just fit with. Because before this, I did a found footage called In a Stranger's House, and before that, though, I did something that had people, some people who worked on it, that were just kind of, it was a very nasty experience and really soured me to a lot of things. And, you know, bringing it, In a Stranger's House was kind of my palate cleanser to kind of do something I wanted to do. And you know, I love found footage, so that's kind of where that came from, and that happened to connect with an audience, so it gave us the opportunity to make this film. And, you know, I just wanted to make a film that I thought was, you know, for me, I thought it was important to make. It was the kind of film I wanted to make. It said it had themes and messages I wanted to talk about. And my now wife Alison is my producer on it, and producer on all the things I do. You know, she's kind of as a big part of this as well. You know, I mean, the big joke between us is that, you know, we make a film about, you know, toxic relationships and all that, but, you know, is that, you know, is it all biographical? Especially because, you know, it's at the time we were talking about getting engaged or getting married and all, and then we're making this film about, you know, how marriage is kind of a huge entrapment. But, you know, we're nothing like that. Like, our relationship is nothing like that. It's just, I guess, me overanalyzing things, and that's where this film comes from.
It was an important story to tell, because it did resonate very deeply with me. And I think that we often are shown stories that are like the absolute darkest side of these types of relationships versus this sort of calm toxicity that is disguised most of the time, that you don't even realize how manipulative or trapped you are until it feels too late to get out. And that's how a lot of those very dark abusive relationships start, and this one just happens to escalate from, I will say, 3 to 10 due to the isolation of the forest.
Yeah, but I mean, even like, I think the forest, and I know this is completely circling back, and it just occurred to me that, you know, the forest could be a bit more, it's almost like society and societal pressures or societal norm pressures in terms of
expectation.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, all the things that supernaturally, you know, you could take them in just a metaphorical sense in terms of they're being driven to do this way. This is the only way through. This is like, listen, you know, just put up with it, get married, you know, go have some babies and it'll all be okay. Obviously a horrible thing. But I mean, at the same time, you know, I mean, I'm glad to see that you connected with the film and in a positive way, at least in a way that you connected with well. And, you know, I didn't go into this lightly, because I'm very aware, you know, I'm just, you know, as you know, as just a cis white guy doing a film about, you know, toxic relationships, you know, it was a very important to me. And, you know, with a character who has addiction problems, I didn't want to be making a film that was about, you know, kind of hitting all the cliches of it or anything like that. You know, I mean, I really thought this out. I talked to some friends who had addiction problems. I was, you know, really thinking about these relationship things, thinking about, you know, what way people can be manipulative, and seeing it firsthand with other relationships and things like that. And even again, just like kind of putting myself in the place of, you know, at a time, you know, what was my mindset, where you can put yourself. And someone asked me what was the kind of takeaway I wanted people to get from the film. And I gave an answer, and I always am annoyed because I feel it was a bit of a half-baked answer because I didn't quite make my point, is that I said it's, you know, kind of about thinking about the other person, you know, putting yourself in their shoes. And I kind of left it at that, but it's not quite what I meant. It wasn't, you know, I don't think, you know, you don't put yourself in an abuser's shoes and go, okay, I can see why they're doing that, because that's the problem. That's, you know, that's what they want you to do, obviously. It's more about, you know, thinking about, you know, what, like, are they, you know, are they being ignorant? Are they being foolish? Are they, you know, is it something that they're doing to manipulate you? You know, being able to see, like, you know, get the perspective and really accept, like, you know, if I said like, this relationship should end or this relationship's going nowhere, are these people, you know, is this person, are they just being willfully ignorant of that? I mean, a relationship is two people. I mean, are they being innocent and naive about it? Or are they, you know, well aware of that, but they want their own way and they're trying to manipulate? So, you know, when I was thinking that idea of like, you know, see things from another perspective, you know, I mean, it was more about the idea of, you know, I guess being a bit more, not aware, I guess aware of your surroundings almost, you know, being aware that, you know, people can be very evil.
There's two sides, in a sense, to all personalities. And then I'm thinking back now about, it's interesting that the circles around the forest is a representation of their, you know, relationship going in circles and this toxic pattern that just seems to never end. So I hadn't really thought too much about that on my viewing, but I can see it now. And it's like I had said with this whole experience of watching, that it definitely also struck a chord with, like, it's very difficult. It's very emotional. You do feel a sense of guilt when you are trying to leave a bad situation, but you deeply care about the other person and you don't want to hurt them. So you just avoid. And you try to just make everything as good as possible, thinking you're going to fix something.
That's it. Like, I mean, I hope, you know, again, I hope just, I only have my perspective on it, which I think is just by nature and is a little bit limited, but I hope that it has, you know, being respectful of, like, you know, if people like yourself have been in situations that are tough to go through, that, you know, it's, you know, it doesn't feel like it's a kind of exploitative approach to anything like that, that it was something you could, you know, get something out of. It could be hopefully maybe a cathartic experience, because I mean, you know, I mean, I know that this film, I feel, has like quite a nihilistic ending, but, you know, not all of them have to. But at the same time, you know, I think in terms of history, you know, we're in a position where, you know, the like, women's rights movements and all that have, you see them make these huge steps forward like 50 or 60 years ago, and now where we are now, it just feels like we've just plateaued. And, you know, from our perspective, you know, maybe growing up you think like we're in a great place for things, but then you start to realize actually no, we're not. You know, in the history books we're still in the middle of this chapter, you know, we're nowhere near the end of this, and it's important to just kind of keep working forward until, you know, we get the resolution that we need from this. And, you know, I mean, hopefully it's going to be the best possible outcome for everyone.
Well, I feel like I can say for me that viewing the film and future viewings of the film is a way to safely go back through that experience, sort of like we do when we use horror films to help us cope with different experiences. And I know that's especially trauma. That's something that I've utilized horror for. So I think that this film could be like that for other people.
I'm really glad to hear that. I mean, you know, as we're kind of saying, horror was always something for a lot of people that's kind of inclusive, I guess, or, you know, I mean, it's kind of like a horrific warm blanket around you, you know, and
yes,
definitely something to be able to kind of process or deal with, or, you know, I mean, sometimes,
which is
you
funny.
Just...
Sorry, it's funny that I said that we got wrapped in a tension blanket when I look back at my review as well. But yes.
But it's great though. Like, I mean, that's, I definitely agree with that. Like, you know, horror is about, like, you know, being able to look at the worst of the worst and, you know, process it in a safe way. And, you know, I mean, like, what are we? I mean, all we are is just big, you know, we're smart animals, you know, with a lot of emotions. And sometimes we need these things to help us process, be it like, you know, to make us get overly emotional, to make us want to scream, to make us want to cry, or to make us just use our big monkey brains and just kind of rethink things.
Well, gosh, I can't thank you enough for, you know, last minute popping in to talk with me. And I'm really excited for everyone to watch Bring Out the Fear.
Yeah, that's, I'm very confident on that one, but that's it. All I want is for people to be able to watch and enjoy the film, and, you know, that's my main goal with it. But the fact that someone can connect with it like you did, that's what I like to hear, you know, to hear people be able to kind of see these themes and be able to pick up on them, to think about them, to talk about them. That's hugely important to me. And I just want people to be able to enjoy it. I'm delighted that we could make this film and be able to share it around with people.